talk about long term, there's long term from a planetary perspective, but also long term for the success of the company. Like, we really value not costing the earth with what the company is doing.
Hello and welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast, the latest show in partnership with City AM, which will be discussing the latest trends, challenges and advancements in the sustainability and ESG landscape. My name is Alex Smith and I'll be co-hosting this podcast alongside Mike Penrose. You may already know us both as the co-founders of Future Plus, the sustainability and ESG management and reporting platform that can help any size and any type of business improve its sustainability. This podcast series is for anyone looking for valuable insights on sustainability in business. We'll be hearing from a range of experts in the ESG and sustainability sectors, including investors, innovators, and regulators. We'll look to provide you with expert analysis and opinions on the future of sustainability in business, including some of the challenges facing us all. I'm delighted to introduce our two excellent guests for today, Danny Lowe, founder of Blockhead, and Jess Pritchard, head of operations and finance at Blockhead.
Hi, I'm Danny Lowe, founder of Blockhead, and we're creators and industry leaders in functional chewing gum.
And I'm Jess Pritchard, and I'm head of operations and finance at Blockhead, working there for 4 years with Danny and the team.
Excellent, and thank you both. In today's episode, we're going to explore a little bit Blockhead's story and vision, how you came about, including your commitment to inclusivity, creativity and integrity. But as well as that, some of the challenges that startups face, especially when bringing to life those type of values, and what constitutes sustainability in today's business landscape. So just to kick things off, because you said at the beginning you do functional chewing gum. Mm-hmm. How did Blockhead come about? What's your origin story? And what is functional chewing gum?
So I actually founded Blockhead while I was at university. I was doing a degree in sports science, learning how you get things into the body quickly for half time at football, rugby, cricket, hockey, that sort of thing. And we were looking at this high sugar, high caffeine mouthwash, which you swirl around your mouth for 5 minutes and spit it out. And it's disgusting, really, really horrible. You know, no one wants to do it. But the benefit of that was you absorb those active ingredients really quickly. So you absorbed it through your gums, underneath your tongue, through your buccal mucosa, which is a really quick way of getting things into the body. And I was like, that's really interesting. Never going to catch on. How can I do something that works in a similar way? And chewing gum was one of those ways of doing it. So there's nicotine gums and aspirin gums, particularly in the Asian markets, but nothing in the nutraceutical kind of functional space. And I was doing a bit of a dull job over the summer holidays and had time to call up various chewing gum manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies to try and get them to produce me my first batch of, at the time it was an energy gum, which was a caffeinated gum. And the first batch arrived as I was doing my finals, my dissertation, and I just sold this caffeinated gum, which each piece contains an espresso's worth of caffeine. It worked in 5 minutes as opposed to 25 minutes. It's completely sugar-free, completely calorie-free. And I thought everyone was going to use it for sport, but quickly realized it was used for revision cramming, hangovers, deadlines, driving all the miles, you know, all those different moments. So that was our first product. And from there, I launched it and tried to build a portfolio of different products for any situation, whether or not that's a vitamin boost, a moment of calm, a moment to relax, and really doing something completely different in the gum category. It's not a new flavor or a new format. It's just a completely new area, which is really exciting.
You used another word there, nutraceutical. Mm. What is nutraceutical?
It's, I guess, between pharmaceutical and your day-to-day chewing gum as such. So it's delivering small non-medicinal benefits. So like performance enhancers thing would be under the category of nutraceutical.
Amazing. That's so exciting. And actually, I saw you guys out in the wild in Hampshire the other day.
Oh, brilliant.
I stopped for petrol and saw it in a petrol station. And
oh,
the amount of people, it was a caffeine one, I could see sort of on a Saturday morning just going, huh.
It's perfect for driving.
It is, absolutely perfect for driving.
Also, the less pit stops because it's not full of fluid as well. So if you've got a long drive ahead of you, then it's quite good for chewing away. I don't need to stop for 2 minutes.
Amazing idea. And part of sort of the development of just bringing something entirely new to the market, in you know, particularly in the UK around that functional, is you a lot of the language that you use on the website and how you talk about the gum is back to your values and the commitments of how you want to build a company as well as a product that does something different. You know, inclusivity, creativity, integrity, tenacity. Where does that sort of sit within your business strategy? Why is it there, and how do you sort of bring in and embed sustainability into that?
Yeah. I think first and foremost, there's loads of different decisions that we need to make on a day-to-day basis, and making sure that we have our values and our missions and things written down, and everyone in the company understanding it, means that we make the right decisions for the long term, not just the short term. And with regards to sustainability, it's always been something that is very core to the company, because you talk about long term, there's long term from a planetary perspective, but also long term for the success of the company. Like, we really value not costing the earth with what the company is doing. It's all about empowering people, and if we're empowering them by costing the earth, then that's a real problem. So we're always looking to do the best thing when it comes to the environment, which isn't always easy, and also making sure that we're ahead of that curve as well, because the general population and general drivers as well are ensuring that, you know, we need to keep the environment and what we're doing there as front and foremost, because retailers and things will catch up eventually, and we need to be ahead of that curve.
Jess, one of the things we have often come across is that translation between, you know, the idea, the strategy, the values upon which a company is founded, and how they translate through to operations, and, mm-hmm. and how they actually come to life in your operations. Yeah. How would you describe the coming to life of everything you just heard in the operations of Blockhead?
I think it comes down to, firstly, where those values have come from. So they weren't just dictated by Danny as the founder of Blockhead. We actually came up with them as the whole team. So everyone thought about, what does Blockhead, not only what does it stand for, but where do we want to, what do we want to kind of keep important to us as we continue to grow as a business? So the fact that everyone has in the team has contributed towards those means it's almost built into what everyone's doing already. And then secondly, I think because they're, you can come up with all sorts of values, as Danny alluded to earlier, but these are ones that are really relevant to our business. So as a brand, we stand for, as Danny mentioned, empowering people, and we're doing something different in a category which is traditionally quite boring and not innovative. So our values, such as creativity and tenacity, really encapsulate the fact that we're kind of pushing the boundaries within the market that we're in. And that translates into not only like what we're doing on the face of it, but on sustainability as well. So we need to be creative in the way that we think about sustainability factors, like within delivering our KPIs in the normal course of business. We need to have the tenacity to keep pushing it, not just taking what we have at face value, like thinking of innovative things that we can do with the packaging or product, and not giving up on those sort of things. So I think because everyone's bought into the values, and because they are designed so they touch on all like layers of the business, then they've been good to us so far.
What are some of the things you're talking about, not costing the earth and building it into packaging? What are some of the actions you've taken, the choices you've made in order to ensure it doesn't cost the earth?
Yeah, I think a prime example would be our most recent product launch, which is our Calm Gum. And as well as delivering on the actual functional benefit side of things, it uses a completely degradable gum base. So it's a natural gum base. It washes away from the pavement. It breaks down. And actually, we developed that quite quickly. We were ready to bring that to the market quite a while ago. But the thing that stopped us of being able to bring it to the market so quickly was actually the packaging. We use a pouch style packaging. It was previously a plastic. It's very low carbon, but like it was a plastic. And we spent a lot of time getting this paper-based packaging ready for the pouch. But we then had a huge issue with the actual seal, which is a resealable pouch. Mm-hmm. And the seal wasn't degradable. So we could have put a non-degradable seal in, but that would have been completely pointless, and it probably would have worked within the context of the framework of, oh, it's degradable, but it wouldn't have been able to be degraded properly. So we spent a huge amount of time developing that, working with third-party suppliers to enable us to actually fuse the seal onto the product, and therefore it was ready for the market and actually able to stand up to people using it day in, day out. So I think that's probably a prime example of something that we've really actioned and then delivered upon. And we're planning on now rolling that out across the rest of our products as well, which is really exciting.
I think chewing gum is one of those things that everyone's so aware of. It just is in our lives, but doesn't don't necessarily have the understanding of what impact it has. Mm-hmm. I think you see it on, you know, the sort of complaints about seeing it on the floor or things like that, but actually how it's made, how it's brought to market, what it's packaged in, I think most people probably don't blink. And actually having a solution is such an incredibly important thing. We were looking for water. I was looking for water this weekend for an event that we were doing, and trying to find water that wasn't in plastic turned out to be so difficult. It's like, how can we make those decisions if those solutions aren't presented to us, or somebody hasn't thought about it for us and given us an answer? I think it's a really interesting way to sort of play with people's attention and really cool ways to do it.
And not skipped to the shortcut,
which
is, you were saying about the seal and your decision making about that. I remember buying recently this, it was a detergent, and it had this sort of cardboard outer. And I ripped up, opened the cardboard outer to see, and inside was a plastic bag. And obviously they hadn't looked at how you can make the cardboard sealable and contain the product. They just stuck it around a plastic bag, which does in our line of work makes you a little despondent from time to time.
I think that's the thing, consumers see through that.
I think that leads well into the next question, which is, you know, we know we face these things all the time. As a startup in today's market, not the most buoyant financial market on the planet or in history, what are some of the challenges you've faced in bringing a sustainable as it can be product to market whilst, you know, maintaining its, you know, how good it is, how good it tastes? We see so many products that people bring to market that are sustainable but not very good, or very good, claim to be sustainable, but are like that detergent bottle that I just described. What are some of the challenges you've faced, and also some of the compromises you think you've had to make in order to maintain that profitability, the reason you're in business, and the sustainability of the product?
Yeah, it's a really difficult balancing act. What we have done is first and foremost, one of our key kind of values is delivery, and actually making sure that we can deliver what we say we're going to deliver. And that's really helped us in that decision-making process, because first and foremost, it must work. Like, it has to deliver on its benefit. There's no point doing a functional product if it doesn't deliver on its function. So that's our number one. The second part of that is, then, well, how do we make that the most environmentally friendly that we can possibly do within that confines? And to be honest, we have the technology to be able to deliver something that can degrade is the lowest amount of carbon usage, but it wouldn't work in terms of its flavor and function, and therefore no one's going to buy it. So while we have the best innovation in the world from an environmental perspective, if no one's going to buy it, then there's no point launching it there. That just means that we know that our NPD cycle needs to be better, so we need to continue to work on, invest, make new different types of product to get to that end goal of making this the most environmentally conscious product, but still delivers on the on its benefit first and foremost. So making sure that it's ready in a number of different KPIs, from the taste, the flavor, the chew, the actual delivery of its benefits, and the environment, all of them must be really met before we bring that to market. That's like really, really important to us.
Just from an operational perspective, that again, that challenges that you've faced bringing, you know, the vision and the idea to life, and some of the compromises you have to make on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think you could dedicate your whole day on like a lot of the team's resources and money to sustainability and impact issues. But in a small business, there's kind of so many things to do. Like, we're operating on everyone in the team, like running at full capacity and still having kind of 1,000 things that they haven't been able to do in the day, because that's sort of the resources that we're working at. And that's why it's so fun and exciting, I suppose. So I think when it comes to long-term things like sustainability, it's having the understanding that it's absolutely necessary to put in the time and investment, whether that's time investment or financial investment, now, because otherwise the long-term vision for the company is just not there, and we're going to kind of fall down at some stage unless we put in those foundations now. So it is quite difficult sometimes, because you're kind of thinking about the next, like the next quarter, the next 6 months, like the next year, and some of these things that we're doing for sustainability and working with you guys at Future Plus, like developing policies which aren't actually going to be applicable, like maybe for the next even like 2 years, for example, like anti-harassment policy or something, making sure our employees are protected around that sort of stuff. well, hopefully would never be applicable, but like it's in such a small team, yeah, like not something that's going to be so necessary now, but ensuring that we've got those foundations now means that we have such a solid base to be able to grow and grow in a really sustainable way that's protecting all of our stakeholders.
We spend so much time speaking to businesses, and you guys are been really good at it, but of trying to embed all of those actions in a, you know, one foot in front of the other kind of way, mm-hmm, that not try to get to when it's a problem, but actually having that means that, you know, if there was ever a problem, you've got the foundations, mm-hmm, to deal with it. And it's really interesting to watch you guys sort of grow and sort of blossom through it. Are you finding that is translating when you're having, you know, all startups who are out there looking for investment and, you know, fundraising, or most startups are looking for fundraising investment? As Mike said, it's a difficult market at the moment. Are you finding that these conversations are translating into those conversations with investors, that you're able to explain why you're looking at sustainability, and is that being valued by them?
Yeah, I think it's one of the first questions they ask is around that sustainability piece, because it's not just a driver for them in terms of your commercial success, but also a driver for them knowing where the future is going. And it's really great that people are talking about sustainability more and more and more, and consumers are demanding that. So it's one of the first questions they ask, and to be able to give such a robust answer of working with Future Plus on all these activities is a big tick box for them.
And, you know, we focused on some of the challenges that you face in terms of this. What are, you think, some of the benefits, some of the real value that's being created by focusing on sustainability so early on?
One, we're setting ourselves up for success ahead of the curve. I use an example in terms of some of the major retailers now are implementing environmental checks of their own. So for you to be able to supply one of the big major retailers, you must have a certain amount of working towards or already be delivering upon some sustainability criteria. Mm. And for us to be able to already show that we were already working to that level and higher is a massive tick box for us. Or the alternative would be that we hadn't been working towards that, and therefore the door is already closed before you even got through the door. So I think the fact that we already had that as part of our core values and have been working towards it has really put us in a good stead for that. That was not our main driving force for doing it, because it's the right thing, but it's also translating into the fact that it's meaning that we're not having to panic to do something as opposed to doing the right thing rather than the quick thing.
But to Alex's point on this, and you were saying about going out with retailers or with finance, how often do you feel you're being asked to sort of demonstrate or prove real value within sustainability, and how often are you being asked sort of to fill in a spreadsheet full of are you doing this, are you doing that, with any explanation as to why it's being valued and measured?
I would say most of it is filling out a spreadsheet rather than actually from the value behind it. I think it's quite a few steps removed from where it's come from initially when you're speaking to, in our case, the buyers or the financial side of things. It's more of a yes, no, tick box exercise. It's how it comes across. I'm sure it initially came from a good place, but it does feel quite far away from that.
It's kind of like fitting a like square peg into a circle hole. Is that the expression or something like that?
Round peg into a square hole.
It's around the same area, but we have like been, as you know, like working to develop like policies or sustainability initiatives that are correct for us in the area that we're operating in and in the size that we currently are and where we're looking to go to. So we don't have everything yet. And sometimes I guess we're being asked to provide stuff that is like, you must have this, this and this, but that's actually missing loads of stuff that is actually more important for a business of our size and in our industry. But at the same time, could actually also be asking for too much compared to what we can feasibly do now. So I suppose more of a flexible, like blank sheet, like outline what you're doing rather than very structured questions would be more appropriate in some cases.
I think this is one of the most interesting as to where we are on sustainability, because it appears that there are lots of questions being asked, but people appear to want to have common answers for all of them across a wide array of products. And unless you understand that sort of qualitative to quantitative nature of how you measure value, you end up with people asking you what's easy to measure rather than what's valuable to measure.
Yeah.
And you know, we see an awful lot that the reason some people feel so pressured to not greenwash, but to say they're doing things that maybe they're not quite, is because they're being asked very blunt questions like, are you carbon neutral or are you working towards carbon neutrality, for example. If you are in anything to do with the production of metal goods? You're not, because at the moment the technology does not exist to make them carbon neutral. You can then disassociate yourself from the production. We get people coming and saying, oh no, the product is mine, the name on it is mine, but I buy the product from someone else, so therefore I'm not responsible for the carbon within that or the social conditions of the workers because it's a bought product, even though it's branded and sold as yours. How many of these type of questions do you think you're being asked? How pressured do you feel sometimes to be doing things that you look at and go, this isn't relevant to our business model?
I think that, like, with some of the retailers, it's like mostly questions like that around like the carbon footprint and stuff. Like, we're definitely not at the stage that where we can measure our, like, all our scope 3 carbon emissions. But like retailers, like Danny mentioned, are starting to talk about how, like, all suppliers having to submit that from next year, which would be like not only for us but for a lot of like SMEs, like a lot of work to do, and potentially, like you say, like focusing on the wrong areas. Like, that's like investing, if you're investing then all of your resource around sustainability and impact into that specific area, there's a lot of stuff which you, in the circumstances that we're in, will miss making actually a bigger impact on, in a more sort of general sense of sustainability that we could be doing, and then move on to that as a second stage. So I think, yeah, mainly with the retailers on the investment side, I think not so much, because generally, well, we've found that investors, like, who understand the size of the business and like are generally investing and like having relationships with businesses of our side, kind of do understand in a way what's possible. And there's a few tick boxes, as we mentioned earlier, but less sort of black and white, I'd say.
Amazing. And I suppose, what's next for Blockhead? Where, you know, where would you like to see it go in a year, 3 years, 5 years time?
Yeah, at the moment, we've got our range of products, which we're really excited about. We're obviously working on rolling across the degradability across all of the products. But then we're really concentrating on our current markets as well, really making them, really growing the brand. It's great to be able to, you know, deliver, we call it a toolkit for life. It's like our internal communication around it, but deliver a series of products which help people on a day-to-day basis, and actually rolling that out across different countries, different areas is kind of the next step for us. And have quite a lot of fun along the way with it. Also, it's always important to have as well.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. It was a fascinating conversation. And again, I think highlighting some of those challenges that face people having a startup with a requirement to meet, you know, what investors want, what your customers demand, but also at the same time, maintaining an integrity in the sustainability that you're trying to roll out was fascinating. So thank you, Danny and Jess, for joining us.
No, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So it just leaves it to me to say thank you very much for listening. Thank you to my co-host, Alex, also to Danny and Jess from Blockhead. And this podcast is available on all major podcast channels.